Today's episode is brought to you by our company, Sales Schema. Sales Schema helps agencies and B2B service companies build a reliable business development system through tasteful and targeted outreach. To learn more about us and check out our latest video training, go to salesschema.com/takecharge.
I just started solving for those with my team. If it was like brand protection or category approval, okay, I want someone that just focuses on that. Okay, if it's SEO and copywriting, okay, I want someone that focuses on that. Okay, if it's fulfillment and warehousing, in 2020, I launched my own warehouse because I'm building my own brands. And that's a major issue that everyone has to fix and deal with when they're creating a brand online. Either they have the fulfillment and warehousing themselves, or they work with a partner. If they're small, that partner doesn't care about them too much. Whether it's like shipments getting mislabeled into Amazon or slippage or any of these things, a lot of your profitability comes down to the warehousing and fulfillment. So big area there. If it was advertising, that was always my thing. So I was finding a lot of success in the early days, even with bad content, bad images, bad SEO, was just being really good at PPC and really good at the advertising piece and being able to grow sales that way. And then it was all the other things like follow-up emails. If there was an area that seemed like it could have enough time for someone to focus on that, I started thinking about that as an area within my company that I wanted to solve for.
Welcome to the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Englander. My new book, Relationship Sales at Scale, is now live on Amazon Kindle, on paperback, as well as hardcover. So to tell you about the book and give you a little context, in a world of noise, competition, and skepticism, you've probably found that spamming your prospects with undifferentiated pitches, case studies, and sales collateral is a lot like yelling at a brick wall. And on the other hand, trying to go old school and completely personalize every touch point 100% is unrealistic and unsustainable because the few people you manage to contact might not even notice or care. And when life gets busy, your sales activity and your team's activity tends to grind to a halt. Your pipeline runs dry and stagnation, feast and famine, all these bad things, they can all happen. So what if the answer is actually combining the new school with the old? And instead of going in cold, how much faster could you grow if you could identify and open doors with the prospects who live within your circles of influence and are already primed to trust and do business with you? So this book, Relationship Sales at Scale, is the new selling philosophy for our age. Bold statement, right? But it is, because it marries the timeless power of tribe-based trust with digitally enabled scale so you can open doors tastefully and convert prospects consistently, all without spamming anyone. So it's written by me, Dan Englander. I'm the CEO and founder of this company, Sales Schema, and the book's stories, strategies, and hands-on resources are grounded in thousands of outreach campaigns conducted for clients since 2014. That's among almost 90 clients to secure opportunities between our clients and hard-to-reach prospects, including the leaders of the largest companies on earth. A few things you're going to learn. You're going to learn how to balance personalization and scale to keep your pipeline full and achieve reliable and predictable growth. You're going to learn how to condense 5 years of networking into a single week-long campaign so you can batch up warm referrals into specific ideal accounts. You're going to learn how to de-risk conversations. That's the emphasis for this, with highly skeptical prospects by leveraging strong personal commonalities instead of boring publicly available information like, hey, I saw you tweeted about this thing last week. That doesn't work. And you're going to be able to leverage dozens of actual copy examples, campaign strategies, and online resources so you can launch and close deals in a matter of weeks. So Relationship Sales at Scale will reshape the way you think about sales and business development, whether you are an owner, a dedicated salesperson, or in any growth-focused role. This book is a fit for the owners and salespeople in professional service companies and other B2B service and or software areas, assuming you're going after high lifetime value. So this is not for small, medium-sized businesses. So with that said, if you would like to learn more and pick up the book on Kindle or paperback or hardcover, and eventually we'll have it out in audio before too long, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/RSAS. Again, that's salesschema.com/RSAS.
Today on the show, I'm very excited to welcome Andrew Morgan. So Andrew is the founder and CEO of Marknology. In addition to that, he's also behind Landlock Clothing, AKCO Properties, and he co-owns Waggedy. Focusing back on the agency Marknology, they are a full-service Amazon brand accelerator with a proven selling system for launching products on all e-commerce platforms with remarkable results. And Marknology has managed over 200 million in sales on Amazon alone. So I've known Andrew for the last couple of years, and I knew he had an interesting background, but I had a lot of fun digging into that today, talking about his travels, his childhood working as a missionary in Africa. We talked about the past, present, and the future of e-commerce, and especially Amazon. We talked about why the idea of finding an Amazon specialist is silly and how you should rethink that, and so much more that I think you're going to be able to take away from Andrew's journey building a what is now 8-year-old and 37-person agency. So without further ado, please give it up for Andrew Morgans. Drew, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So I want to say we've talked for the last couple of years or so, and you're among, you know, several people I know that are kind of like newer to the Amazon space or got in an earlier phase. And it's just, there's so much to get into there with how precious few people actually understand it. And I think you're one of those few. So we'll definitely get into that. But we were talking before I threw on the recorder, and you have a really interesting background. So I'd love it if you could give people your life story.
I'll try to give it briefly, but I was born in Montreal to missionary parents. Before I was 6 weeks old, I think I was flying out to Kansas City. I'm like living in Kansas City, Missouri now, Kansas City, Kansas. We were talking about some of the differences. But my parents were missionaries and always trying to get to French Africa. So while I'm a dual citizen, I spent very little time in Canada, just proud to be Canadian around here because they have a good reputation. But spent the next 16 years of my life in Cameroon, Botswana, Moscow, and my teenage years in Congo, DRC Congo, formerly known as Zaire. It was a wild place. I think that, like, in some ways, as I look back, my 30s, like, set me up to be an entrepreneur or be able to get through a lot of the difficulties of being an entrepreneur and kind of the mindset that's needed, just like outside the box thinking and resiliency and like just making do with little. And, you know, some of these things that like only an African experience could really shape. And also saw my dad hustle and put together side hustles and all those kinds of things and bring things to life out of nothing. You just see crazy things there. You don't just go to the store and buy stuff. I remember one time we were taking a trip in Cameroon from like village to village. It was like getting dark in a belt blue on our Jeep. And my dad is not an automotive kind of guy. You know, he's a missionary bookworm kind of guy. Think of Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory. That's like my dad. But you can't leave like a family out there in the dark and in the middle of the jungle, in the middle of the bush. So he literally took one of our spare tires, cut it up into strips, and made these like belts essentially for the Jeep that could like take us to the next village. And that's a story I tell, but think of like a lifetime of that, of just like ingenuity and like thinking outside the box and doing whatever you have to do to get it done. And I look back on that with like a smile, like thinking of like, you know, my dad and some of the best light, like, you know, just taking care of family and getting stuff done. And like, there's no excuse but get the job done. So things like that. I came back at 16. There was war in Congo. So like the president got assassinated, came back, went to Liberty High School in Kansas City. Liberty was like one of the top 10 cities in America for raising a family at that time. I can remember like seeing some news article about that, though. Just like a really good suburb, good schools outside of Kansas City, but did not fit in well there. Just think of like a super white, redheaded kid. My dad was really sick. That's actually why we came back. So he was in hospital at Mayo Clinic for like 2 years. And so I was kind of just on my own figuring out American high school. It can be a tough place for a normal kid, much less a kid that's like African on the inside and redheaded on the outside. I know some people listening probably thinking Mean Girls, but I wasn't that cool. But from there, I got a chance to go to school in Hawaii and jumped at it. So, you know, at 17 years old, I graduated early, went to school in Hawaii, and I started going for computer science. And I was just always good with computers. Like, I had a lot of time in Africa. My dad was always into computers. You know, I was just doing all the things on computers. Like, it always just came natural to me, from like hacking the telecom provider's satellite to get more speed, to, you know, networking LANs back then. And like, this is like, you know, 98, 99. And I was in my young teens, like just hacking software and don't tell mom. So in college, I started playing music. Started studying computer science, came back to Kansas City, knew no one, tried out for a professional band. And for the next 5 years, I played music professionally, trying to tour the US, trying to just see the world. You know, I was from a conservative Christian family. I'd been in Africa, sure, but I wanted to see what the world was like. here and loved creating things, which leads me to, you know, Marknology ultimately in the company I have now, but I love creating things. The computer science thing was just, I didn't want to go to school, pay all this money to get a degree and then not be able to get a job. That was like my biggest fear, was like, get this degree without connections and not be able to get a job. Cause I really was kind of from the bottom with no connections and was doing my own way through school, like, you know, just paying my own car, my own apartments, everything. I was on my own. So computer science just came super easy for me. So while I was putting all my passion into music, it was like, I was getting this computer science degree as well. I just got tired of being poor at some point. My band was pretty successful. Actually, I'll save you all the details of that. But like, you know, we were like playing 300 or 400 kids. Like one year we played 96 shows. We were on the road all the time. And it was really where I started learning branding. When I look back, I was learning how to, like, one, when you're talking to labels, they wanted to see you showcase. They wanted to see you present almost like a pitch deck of your album, you know, and you've got merch that you're trying to keep in stock. Cause that's how you, you know, selling the shirts is really, it was easier to sell merch than CDs almost at that point. People love the shirt designs you're coming out with. So you've got, you know, albums you're putting together and merch and booking shows and kind of this biz dev piece. And then the label saying, like, we're looking for a branded, you know, we're looking for a band design that kind of has this look, feel, and really thinking about those things. I actually got disenchanted with the music industry. Like, I'm sure a lot of people have, and it's changed even now where it's a lot easier to be discovered, like through Spotify or YouTube or things like that. But back then you definitely needed a label. And I was just like, well, if this is just business, because we were on tour with some really big bands that I looked up to a lot of my childhood, even like the exposure I had, I was like, these bands are like legit. And I'm on tour with them. I'm getting to talk to them. Think of them like business mentors, you know, and I'm setting up with them, tearing down with them. We were like opening up shows for them and just kind of hearing their lifestyle and what it was really like. I think on the other side of that tour of success, I was like, I don't think this is what I want. I'm going to go back to my degree. Okay. So I had been like just finishing up and I'd already made a promise that I was like, I'm not going to be 30 and like this poor band guy that's like, just like, you know, washed up. Like I was already the first to get a college degree in my family. So I was like, you know, I'm going to be successful in some way or another. So I didn't need material things. I just needed to be able to create and travel and explore. Well, I realized that I was doing all those things, but without my finances squared away, you know, I was in cities like Dallas or in cities like New Orleans or in cities like Chicago or New York playing music, but I couldn't experience anything that those cities had to offer. So I went back to computer science, worked in a NOC at MasterCard, a pretty, you know, prestigious company around here in Kansas City, worked at MasterCard, started crushing that job. Just like, it was like tribal knowledge kind of learning there. And I do really well with that kind of stuff, making more money than I ever had. But after a year, I was like, I absolutely hate this. It was kind of like, it was 12-hour shifts. You go in there, you monitor bank networks. Maybe something happens in that 12-hour shift. It's like a 15 minutes of like intense, like quickly moving and redirecting traffic. And then it was like 11 and a half hours of watching cops with subtitles, and I just hated it. And after a year, they were offering me a raise and a permanent position. And I was like, please God, anything else. I took a chance at a startup selling car parts online. And that's where kind of my e-commerce journey begins. And I'll leave it there. But that was almost 11 years ago. I found e-commerce and I just haven't looked back. For me, it's like been the perfect blend. Even the way I named my company, Marknology, this perfect blend of marketing and technology coming together, that's e-commerce. So that's my history. And it's diverse, but it's one that led me to like something that I absolutely love.
That's interesting. And thank you for that. And there's probably a million things we could dig into there. I guess on the e-commerce side, what was that first venture and what was it like back then? This would have been 2011 or so. Like,
yeah,
what did things look like then?
Car parts weren't online. I was employee number three. There was a web guy there younger than me, but he was my boss. And he had built out the website and kind of a lot of the first manufacturing contacts and listed the product. We were selling trailer hitches, trailer lights, ball mounts, anything you can think of for like RVs or trucks or tonneau covers, you know, bushwhacker, like fenders and all kinds of stuff. And I realized, you know, we were doing drop shipping in the best way then, you know, it's kind of like it's antiquated now, but it was shipping directly from the manufacturer to customers. There wasn't a lot of customer trust online back then. The Amazon wasn't as big. And I, you know, I'm an Amazon agency now. I feel like Amazon really, with Prime, really got the masses to start trusting their orders online, getting it in 2 days or getting it refunded and like fast shipping. And not all this just like, maybe this website is trustworthy, maybe it's not. It was really just like the Wild West back then. We started doing private label. We started doing drop shipping. We started doing like brand direct. They were doing it all there. And within a year, As employee three, I was put in charge of Amazon and eBay, and I grew sales by over $1 million. And I was kind of the only one touching it. I was up at 3 a.m., like uploading tracking numbers from orders, like from the drop shipping order, all that kind of stuff, because software didn't really exist. And I was just hooked. You know, I was figuring out, one, we were negotiating with FedEx and UPS how to get like dimensional shipping reductions, where we were like saving so much money in these oversized shipping rates that we could come in at a lower price than people that had been selling stuff for a very long time. They just didn't understand how to get shipping down. And so we were killing it with hitches. I was coming up with these combos. People would call them like bundling or kits now. It's pretty common in e-commerce, but it was like a trailer light, maybe the ball mount and the hitch, like for like your Toyota Sienna van, which was like the most commonly purchased van like at that time. And I was putting it together for customers where they didn't have to like buy all those things separately. They could like, oh, this person's already put it together for me. I'm going to buy from them. Right. And I was like photoshopping it kind of on eBay and doing these things. And it was working. And it was like, you could put something up and within 10 minutes get a sale. And to me, that was like, just, I mean, it was amazing. It was like, look, I'm able to see like the direct impact of my work or my creativity. And, and I was hooked.
Yeah. And kind of a sidebar there. Drop shipping is antiquated. I feel like it's kind of dead, as you say. I'm guessing Amazon killed it, but how did they kill it, assuming that's true? And like, what happened to drop shipping?
So with drop shipping is like, there's just a lot of customer service issues, in my opinion. So let's say I'm the website and I'm drop shipping from a manufacturer. They're making the product and then they're going to send it directly to the customer. Well, there's this funnel of, I need to tell them what was ordered. I need to pay them. They got to send it back to me. They got to update me with tracking. Then the item has to go to the customer. There's a lot of areas right there in that flow where it can go wrong, as well as, you know, you were selling items that maybe the manufacturer would say in stock, but then would be in back order. So you're like collecting money from customers and then the items aren't going out. Or more modern days, a lot of people drop ship straight from China where the shipping times are super long. You're getting it super cheap, but you can't guarantee where it's coming from and it takes a long time. So if you don't have the physical item in hand, there's no way you can actually guarantee the customer that it's going out the door or that you're getting it to them, inserts, things like that. As well as Amazon Prime was growing and you can't have an item in Prime that's drop shipped. So a lot of different reasons there. I do feel like some people can still drop ship and make money with more like a maybe like trendy things or gimmicky things that come out real fast and you can like run some ads and like, you know, run some drop shipping to that. But for like to the established brands that are tried and true, that method doesn't really work anymore.
As a quick break, I wanted to let you know about our newest video training, How to Take Charge of Your Agency's Future Revenue. By the end of this training, you're going to learn how we get 2 to 5 qualified appointments every week using tasteful and highly targeted email outreach. That might not sound like a lot, but once you understand the outreach napkin math, you're going to learn how this can lead to massive scale for your agency or B2B service company. In addition to that, you're going to learn the 6 steps for successful outreach campaigns based on everything that we've learned from working with more than 100 agencies since 2014. You're going to get the complete agency outreach tech stack so you understand the right tools for getting the right results. And you're going to see agency to brand email examples and get inspiration from high converting campaigns. So to get this 30-minute training, all you need to do is go to salesschema.com/take charge. Again, that's salesschema.com/take charge. Yeah. So from the auto parts venture, did you go on to other e-commerce businesses or what kind of came next?
Yeah, great question. So actually at the time I was in a relationship, a serious one, and it ended. And I was like, I was honestly kind of devastated. I had been like crushing it at work, like 4 or 5 raises in that $1 million year. And I just wanted to take a chance at something else and kind of like focus on my career. So I took a chance as an e-commerce manager, which was like, instead of just at a startup employee number three, this was like my chance to level up. And I never saw myself as an agency owner, an entrepreneur. Really, I didn't even know what that word was, I'll be honest with you. I was a hustler. I always had side projects and hustles and things like that. But I always just wanted to be good at whatever I was doing. So besides band days, you know, I've been a security guard at the casino. I've been a bartender for 6 years. I've been a painter, a pro painter, pro landscaper, warehouse worker, like all the trade jobs you can think of, just like working my way through school and doing what I know how to do, you know? So for me, figuring this out, it almost didn't seem like work. When you know what like real work is, like landscaping in Hawaii, you know, for a 10-hour day, that's like real work. sitting behind a computer felt like, this is just like, oh my God, I'm getting to use my brain for work. So I was like, you know, I could just go. So as an e-commerce manager, I had a small team. I was part of like, they had the branding and creative and marketing team. They had the technology team. I was actually hired by technology. That's why Marknology came about. I called these lunches Marknology lunches, mixture of marketing technology teams come together and have a lunch. And so I was in the technology team, but having to work with marketing day in and day out to get eBay and Amazon relevant to what was happening on the websites and things like that to stay in tune. So I was brought in mainly to manage, yes, the websites back end, but launch on eBay and then take over their Amazon account. And I really just put into play what I had learned at the automotive shop, which was, you know, let's get some good images in there. Let's make sure like the bare necessities are done, like, you know, bullet points and descriptions and like, you know, ads that just came out in 2014 or 15 on Amazon. That was a couple years in. So these were all things that I was just like, let's focus on these. I still didn't know what I was doing, but it was a company that had somebody internally that was like, I want to make Amazon a focus because they were doing about 2 million on the channel. It was a toy brand that had about four different companies that I was managing, probably like 300 employees, 8 retail stores. So a decent sized company. And honestly, what was like the launch board for what I do today with Marknology, I was sitting in a company that was used to be a big toy catalog company. They were like really successful and they were trying to like step into the new, you know, selling in 2022 or 2012 at that time and just struggling. So I was, you know, as e-commerce manager, I was like pushing. I was so obsessed with e-commerce in general. I'm still obsessed that it was really the company holding me back from everything I was trying to do. We were seeing amazing results, but it was just like pushing against like a wall. But I sat in the rooms with the sales team that was like, you know, you can't take our sales from this customer. This is like one of my largest customers. And they were just like reselling on Amazon. I'm like, yeah, but the company doesn't need them. I can do that right from here. And we won't lose that margin. You know, the difference in selling at retail or selling at a 50% margin when you have an e-commerce manager right here, that's my territory. As a sales manager, that's my territory. And I was like, you know, if I was getting commission of sales like everybody else in this room, I would be pissed that you guys are taking customers from my, you know, from my area. And just trying to have those conversations as a young man, like in a company that was passionate about e-commerce and seeing kind of how it went over, you know, the same conversations with customer service, same conversations with the marketing team that was off Amazon, the email and, you know, affiliate marketing. I was in charge of affiliate marketing, but email marketing and, you know, the website and trying to get Amazon to the same level as the website. And I was just having all these conversations from leadership, the C-suite, sales team, customer service team, the accounting team. And I think a lot of people pioneering the Amazon space were doing private label or, you know, going to Alibaba, making brands or getting product or even wholesaling. But there were very few that were like maybe working, at least it ended up being an agency that were working inside of brands, trying to navigate that, which was quite a bit different with MAP pricing and all those things than it was just like private labeling a brand and launching on Amazon. So a little bit different path, but that second job in e-commerce really shaped me for where I am today.
Yeah. And maybe more followed that. But I guess one question I have is like, I remember Amazon being a thing in my head. Maybe this was like 2010. I was like, okay, Amazon comes out with books, right? Amazon was like, that's their thing, Amazon books. And then it was like, oh, okay, they do more stuff now. And then there was this like gap in the middle. And then all of a sudden it was like, Amazon is just the most dominant company and they've always been here and will always be here. And they're just ubiquitous. What was that middle level like? Like, when did it click for you that Amazon was going to be the dominant player and the thing to hit your wagon to, which you seem to have done?
At the beginning, it was confusing because you needed to have products that had a UPC barcode to be able to sell it on Amazon versus eBay. You didn't necessarily have to have that. Okay. And then Amazon had all these strict requirements that until then, nothing really being sold online had these strict requirements, like a white background photo, like kind of proving that you're a brand, like these kinds of things. Well, in the early days, like let's even say the automotive company, lots of people like me just taking products and putting them on Amazon in a mess kind of way. Okay. So it was like, just throw products up, see what sells, see what doesn't sell. And it became like the catalog was a mess. So people just like me messed up the catalog. And then now I'm in the business of cleaning up the catalog for search and algorithms and all that thing. But basically there was like an army, I would say, of people like myself that were taking products and brands. So there was the Amazon team going out there and getting big brands and getting them to buy and sell to Amazon retail. But then there were people in the middle like us going out there and getting all of the other lower hanging fruit and launching those products on Amazon and making a ton of money. Well, then private label was like, this is almost so good to be true. Why be buying wholesale from another brand when we can just create our own brand and do it better? And so there was this big influx of small brands that were doing Amazon the right way and offering us a ton of product. And it became a place where people would go based on reviews. They would buy from a new brand they had never heard of if the reviews were good and they trusted it. It was kind of like this word of mouth craze of like, I'll try Anchor products, right? That became a $1 billion company launched on Amazon. Plenty of brands like that. So there's been this evolution almost to the point where the ones that started it, where they were going out there and getting product and then just listing it on Amazon, that doesn't work anymore. You almost need like a bigger margin. You need to be the manufacturer. You need to be doing private label. You need to be the brand owner yourself, be successful on Amazon. And those brands that maybe at first were okay with someone just like, yeah, we'll sell this distributor and this distributor can sell for us on Amazon. Now those brands are like, well, we kind of want to do it at a higher level. We want to storytell better. We want to collect our data. We want to be including inserts and like try to retain our customers. We want to make sure we're brand protected on Amazon. You know, when someone types in our brand name, we're coming up. So there's been just kind of this evolution of like, as more products got up there, brands started seeing how much sales maybe a distributor was doing for them on Amazon and being like, whoa, this is something we need to pay attention to. And in a world of like no trust, I think Amazon brought trust.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's something I definitely want to get further into. I guess to frame that out a little bit, can you talk about Marknology? Like what inspired you to found an agency, you know, and how did that come about?
I was at US Toy, this toy company. I like wasn't going as fast as I wanted to in e-commerce. I wanted to do a lot more. And I was just like, you know, it was honestly just pure passion, not like business ownership, not seeing a great opportunity, just like pure passion for e-commerce and wanting to solve problems. And I started freelancing. I'd read this financial blog of like how to get out of school debt. This blog was like, instead of going back to bartending or a side hustle, because, you know, I was making 45K, 50K in Kansas City. That's not going to get me to travel the world. It's not going to get me everywhere I want to be. I started saying like, okay, what's the high end of e-commerce? Back then it was maybe like 100K in New York. That was the top. Now, I mean, it's like 400K to put it in perspective, like the high end e-commerce person. So it just, the ceiling wasn't that high. I was like, what else can I do? Always had side hustles or second jobs, was going through a breakup. I'm like, I'm reading these blogs. The blogs was like, double down on what you're already doing. Just find something outside your job to freelance. And this had just never popped in my head. So I got on Upwork and Elance and like freelancer.com, if you remember those. Mm-hmm. I think Upwork bought them all, but I had like reviews on all of them. And I was just getting like these projects. Like I worked with Adidas and I worked with Suiza. And I worked with some really big companies from Elance and Upwork because there just wasn't anyone else doing service-based work for Amazon. I was winning by default. Not that I was that great. I was doing a project, getting a good review, getting paid. You know, it's almost like the Amazon algorithm in the same way. And that like it just boosts you up the ranking. So before long, I just all of a sudden was top 10 on Upwork in the marketing category. And I was probably the only service-based provider doing Amazon in the top 10 there. So I'm trying to be like as humble as possible. I think it was a mixture of them acquiring Elance and just like been doing it a minute and then no one else doing it. But whenever I got top 10 there is really when Marknology started becoming like a real idea in my head. I'd been getting projects, you know, you get like a 20 or 50 cent raise at a corporate company. That's like $800 a year or something, $1,000 a year. I don't know, something very small. And I was making that in a weekend on these Amazon projects. And while I was doing affiliate marketing and web and email, because all these other areas of e-commerce I'm passionate about, I was getting success every time almost on Amazon. And why take on all these other clients when everything you touch on the Amazon side is turning into dollars for those clients and they're not getting upset on the phone? And, you know, I was honestly, whenever I was building Marknology, I was probably working 120 hour weeks, I promise you. It was a bad breakup, right? And I was just putting all my energy into work and it was winning. And you know, I probably made like $120,000 that year between freelance and my day job. And it was this turning point of just like, what else do I have to lose here or fear? Like just jump all in. I like no one else was doing it. So what I will say is that there was no one telling me this is a good idea or not. You know, right. I didn't know anything about agency life. I didn't know how to build an agency. I'd never worked at an agency. I feel like I know how to build a team. just maybe being a missionary kid, like, or just like, you know, being the guy that doesn't usually get picked. Well, I'm going to pick the best guys to win the game, or I don't know. But I feel like that's maybe the only skill I came into agency life with, was like team building. And I just got four or five clients, collected them, giving me, you know, 500, 600 a month. And I was like, this is enough for me to take a leap on. And Marknology turns 8 this month in August.
Congrats. Yeah, that's huge. Thank you. And with that, how would you describe the process of kind of building Marknology in the early days? Like, I think one thing that I've, and I'm not a huge expert on the Amazon space, but I think one thing that differentiates Amazon agencies is you're like dealing with inventory. Like, there's a lot more like sticky operational problems versus just a typical agency where it's like, we'll help you get business, we'll put up a billboard, we'll drive leads, you know, whatever it is. What was it like kind of like setting up an agency in an uncharted territory in like year one?
It was hard as hell. I think I was too early for the industry in a lot of ways, which has set me up now that like everyone's pushing toward it. And I've just been doing it so long. The expertise is a benefit. But at the beginning, getting anyone to pay me for what we do was very hard. You know, like web and some of those areas had been defined, like, you know, what's a decent website cost you? Well, someone can go out there and get a quote, you know, and be like, that's a decent website. And that's you getting a fair price. But with Amazon, it was like, you know, $15 an hour on Upwork kind of thing. Then you're trying to say, okay, this is what I do and what I offer. And Amazon is such a problem solving platform that there's like really this broad scope of things that you might need to do for a brand. At first, it just started with like, with each client, it was individual, like what they wanted and what they needed. And then, you know, it's evolved now. I'm completely fully integrated because as I work through, you know, we've worked at 300 plus clients. We've worked with Fortune 500 companies like Mayo Clinics, the Nestle's, like big clients, all the way down to like the small startups. So I've seen a plethora of problems. And I just started solving for those with my team. If it was like brand protection or category approval, okay, I want someone that just focuses on that. Okay, if it's SEO and copywriting, okay, I want someone that focuses on that. Okay, if it's fulfillment and warehousing, in 2020, I launched my own warehouse because I'm building my own brands. And that's a major issue that everyone has to fix and deal with when they're creating a brand online. Either they have the fulfillment and warehousing themselves, or they work with a partner. If they're small, that partner doesn't care about them too much. In a boom, being small is even worse, whether it's like shipments getting mislabeled into Amazon or slippage or any of these things, a lot of your profitability comes down to the warehousing and fulfillment. So big area there. If it was advertising, that was always my thing. So I was finding a lot of success in the early days, even with bad content, bad images, bad SEO, was just being really good at PPC and really good at the advertising piece and being able to grow sales that way. And then it was all the other things like follow-up emails. If there was an area that seemed like it could have enough time for someone to focus on that, I started thinking about that as an area within my company that I wanted to solve for. And so I really have kind of like these different teams within Marknology that solve these different things on Amazon, because there's no way you can have someone that's amazing at demand forecast and inventory management and supply chain that's also a great SEO sales copy and SEO guy, that's also great at advertising, that's also good at brand protection and IP and trademarks, that's also good at, you know, international expansion, that's also good at this. And you know, that's what most companies are trying to solve for, is like one guy or girl that's good at all of that, or maybe one or two people. And I just realized, like, I've done all those things. I don't love doing all those things. How can I get people to help me? So starting with interns, to my sisters joining me early in the beginning, to volunteers, to swapping people for services to be able to get some help. In the early days, it was like, I had no budget. I'm bootstrapped. I tried a little bit of everything, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And there's like, and it's funny that you say that, because now that I think about it, I've heard different agencies say like, we need to hire an Amazon expert. And I'm like, that's a million roles, right? It sort of reminds me of, you know, when people think of sales, they think of one role, when in reality, it's a village of people making this stuff happen. To dig into that a little bit, you know, what are those roles that, you know, you look to hire now? Like, for example, can you actually find that talent, or do you think more about training somebody from like a parallel or like a connected position? Like, how do you think about hiring versus training, if that makes sense?
I think in the agent, on the side of the agency, there's positions I can hire that come experience, like sales, that's brought us together. And well, I'll talk about that, because these are things I'm solving for. Within Amazon, there wasn't someone you could hire. There isn't someone you can hire now. That's good. In my opinion, you have to poach them. There isn't just people sitting out there on the market with amazing Amazon skills that are unemployed. It does not exist worldwide. Amazon has gone to the Philippines and created a workforce that then they leave Amazon and join agencies. So that's a thing. Same thing has happened in Mexico and India and a few other places. The Philippines is actually Amazon themselves, Amazon corporate out there training, you know, overseas staff and things like that. So they actually get trained by Amazon, which depending on who you're asking might be worse to have them as employees. But for me, I honestly just looked for talented people that wanted a quality of life change and that wanted a career change and that wanted to be part of something. And I've built a team from a lot of non-e-commerce people. So GMs at restaurants, sales guys at AT&T, engineers, you know, equestrian science majors, photography majors, graphic design majors, social media marketing people. You know, I've pulled from everywhere to build my team. We're actually to 37 people now. I've got staff in Mexico, New York, Tampa, Colombia, and most importantly here in Kansas City is where our HQ is. So at first we started real core and centric to like me and like the team and being part of a team and being part of a startup. And then, you know, over the last couple of years, we've expanded to be more of a remote team and a virtual team once we feel like we have a culture. Like that was super important for me to try to build a culture, because as a bootstrapped agency owner, I can't pay them as much as they might get from one of these aggregators that's throwing a team together in New York with $200 million behind them. That's a real problem. I came to the table really thinking about like serving the team and like how can I best serve the team? How can I create a quality of life here that's beyond just what we're doing at work or what they can get paid with money? And so I really built a team with people that are driven by other things. Not entirely, I'm generally speaking, but those were some of the things I really did at the beginning to kind of think of that. And then, you know, what I'd solve for now is like, I can go out and get a sales team, you know, that can help me sell, or a sales guy or woman. I can go out and get accountants or bookkeepers. I can go out and get legal help, or I can go and get customer service or different account managers, maybe project managers. But for us, I truly believe Marknology is one of the best in the world at what we do. And that's because we don't just have generic people in roles. We have people with like, you know, I've got 25-year-olds with 5 years experience with me at Marknology. And that's just, you know, that's almost unheard of, you know, at 25 years old to have 5 years of experience on the platform. So I don't know. Honestly, I'm so thankful for them. I'm so thankful for the team.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that you obviously have more experience in Amazon than almost anyone. And a lot of people looking to hire for that role are probably thinking in terms of poaching or like getting somebody, you know, really good, getting them out of one company and do another. But it sounds like you've actually like hired and trained a lot of those skill sets, you know, from other areas. There's probably a lot of things that went into that, but what did it take to do that, to take somebody who was like a restaurant GM and get them to understand Amazon and like work in it every day? Not saying that's literally one of the examples, but what did that process look like?
Well, for me, I mean, I shared a little bit of my background, like growing up, but growing up in Congo shaped my entire life, right? I was in a war zone. I was in, you know, trust and like these kinds of qualities and values. Like I've seen the worst of humanity. My gratitude starts at like, how many places in this house can I drink water, like clean water, you know? And I'm not being dramatic. Like that's, I really try to bring my gratitude to that point almost every single day. It's just like, you know, and so because of that, life is like really hard and business is really hard. And like agency life is really hard and service-based businesses are even harder. And, you know, it was just like, if I'm going to go through all of this, one, first and foremost, I have my sisters join me. So their loyalty is unmatched and their intelligence is unmatched, like literal geniuses on my team. Just lucky that they believed in me when I first started this. And they're like, I'm going to join Drew. And, you know, we've taken care of my parents. Just, you know, we were in certain situations and the families kind of come together like through this agency to really like set the family up for a better life. And in doing so, attracted people to that mission and that cause, I think, because it was not, it was like, we're doing it for us, we're doing it for family, we're doing it for tribe. And it attracted people to that. And what I really looked for was just like work ethic and integrity and character and intelligence. I can train them. I didn't think that it's rocket science to manage Amazon or to do Amazon in a big way. It's not rocket science. It's someone being able to teach and lead and then being able to, it's intentionality and having strategy. And so we already had the tribal knowledge, right, of years of doing it. It was simply getting people that believed in what we're doing, me being more patient before they started becoming actually like really productive as team members, but understanding that I was getting somebody that was making a career change, that I saw something in them that I liked. And a lot of times we started, so I've got a couple hires from the college that started as paid interns here. We would intern them, and if they felt like a great fit, then they would come on. you know? And then others were people that I'm like, I need like a mid-manager. I need someone that knows people. I know someone that knows how to manage a team. What better than a GM of a restaurant, right? That's got line cooks and it's got, you know, sometimes it's like back of house speaks a different language than front of house. And they've got bartenders and they've got, you know, that they've got hosts that are 16 or 15 years old at the front. And they've got like, you know, who names it, but they've got a big diverse team. And being able to communicate and run a team is a skill that I think can translate to lots of different things.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's I like to hear that because it's like you're falling back on the stuff that's like timeless and just looking for potential in people, trusting them, supporting them, as opposed to I need to find this person that matches this fancy skill set, you know, that nobody really understands or very few people understand. So can you talk about where you kind of think the Amazon space is going and what's the potential for agencies to work in it, right? Because I think with not having a ton of experience in it, it seems like it could go a lot of different ways. Amazon could limit the ability to be creative and they could just make things more Soviet, I guess, in a way. Or it could go a different way where, you know, brands have more power and there's more room for creativity and so on. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking because I have a lot of opinions about this. I started chasing the margin. I wanted more control. Early on, I worked with Adidas, like when I was a freelancer on Upwork, and they had amazing content, like photography and video and all this kind of stuff. They also had vendor access at Amazon, which a lot of like third-party sellers now have today, but they didn't back then. And once I saw the results of like what good content and video and like a good team's photography could do, it was really hard for me to accept anything less than that. I just saw the results. It was pure money. It made the ads go further, made the conversion rate improve. It was like a no-brainer. And I kind of fell into that. Well, then I saw these brands struggling. What I've really done is I've created an Amazon agency that's being known for our branding and storytelling, which I'm super pumped about. And that's what's happened. But because I saw the need for that, I was like, look, if this partner goes out there and gets a good photographer or a good graphic designer and listens to us, we get amazing results on Amazon. If they don't, we don't. So I was like, I need to be able to control that. I started building a team internally. Well, that's really hard because Amazon is like ops. So everything can be done in 10 minutes, 5 minutes. It's operations, it's supply chain, it's product, it's pricing, it's profitability, it's analysis, it's PPC. And then there's branding and creative, which is like a slow creative process. It's different. And so most people create these two different agencies. That's why, you know, the big companies have a media buying team and they have like a branding and creative team, right? Well, Amazon is the blend of the both. And if you understand that all those metrics from like click-through rate, to conversion rate, to return rate, to engagement, to all that stuff is being tracked by Amazon. And you can dial those things in while you've got an upper hand. So with all these agencies popping up across the globe, localization is a big advantage of ours. Being like US-based, even my Colombian team, being like closer related to the Western culture than, let's say, India or the Philippines. And don't get me wrong, I've got team members like, you know, all over the world, but talking about selling on Amazon.com, a lot of these agencies that popped up because it was hard to get paid for what we were doing, because they were maybe Amazon sellers that turned into agencies first, where they had used VAs to list their products and things like that. They've got armies of like individual teams doing different things for them on Amazon at a cheap price, but not in a cohesive way that's bringing it all together, not in a localization piece, not an emotionally engaging, creative branding kind of way, like something that's been as old as time. You know, the big brands have always done emotionally connect with customers and create a brand that lasts. And I'm just trying to bring those elements to Amazon. And I feel like Amazon has been leaning into that, from adding video to Amazon Post to Amazon Live to Amazon Influencers to buying Twitch, you know, to all of these things. They've gone more toward creative and giving more control to a custom creative on the ads. So I'd say Amazon, I definitely see them moving more toward creative, more toward, they just don't really know how. So they're trying and it's an evolution. And I've been leaning into that as hard as possible, as well as, you know, I was leaning into going directly with brands and manufacturers because their margins are better and because they care about their products, because they built the brand because they care for the most part, or manufacturers have the ability to change and improve. And Amazon's is a platform that will roast you if your reviews and your product come back crappy. Okay, so working with the manufacturer, we have a better margin. They don't know how to sell because most of the times they sell directly to a retail store and a buyer for the most part. But if I can help them sell directly on Amazon, we have the highest chance of success. So, you know, that's been my kind of my play, going up the food chain, going there, going with like longer stable players that are building for the long game. Like, we're not done in 3 months or 6 months as an agency. We're like building a platform and we have a path to profitability and things like that. And then focusing on that brand and creative storytelling element. I'll tell a short story. I was at Amazon Prosper 2 years ago at an after party. If anyone knows, Amazon Prosper is like the biggest Amazon show each year. And there's more and more popping up, but sellers from all over the world. I'm at this after party with some of the biggest players, the biggest aggregators in the space. It's a whole racket. It's awesome. If you're in this space, you should go to the show. And I'm sitting there with a buddy, and I'm not great at who's who. I can't tell faces and names. I'm that creator that's just like in my own world. And if I start looking around and comparing, I just like get so derailed. So I just like do my own thing almost like religiously. And, but I'm at this event with that friend that's showing me around. He shows me this man that is like one of the biggest sellers on Amazon.com. He's doing 500 million. Like the last year he did 500 million, which is like crazy. Right. And I'm like, oh my God, that's like super impressive. And I'm like, what? I don't want to go sell him. What do I need to sell him on? He's like already crushing it. That's insane. And my buddy David's like, just go talk to him. Like, he's really nice. Go talk to him. So I'm like, I'm in shorts, like in this pool, like in Vegas, you know, this is like my second time to Vegas ever. And I go up to him and I'm like, hi, I just want to introduce myself. I like, you know, my buddy told me like, you're absolutely crushing on Amazon. I've been in this space like 10 years or, you know, I'm like, I'm not trying to sell you. I just like wanted to talk to you and say like, you know, you guys are absolutely crushing it. What's like one thing you guys are trying to do better? Or like, you know, what's a problem for you on Amazon? I kind of just wanted to see what someone that's doing 500 million had to say. And he said, we just can't figure out the branding and storytelling piece. And I didn't bait him to say that, you know, like I didn't. He's just like, we have all these products that are crushing it individually doing these things. But as far as like cohesively pulling brands together and selling, it's like really hard for us. And we're trying to solve for that. And that was a little validating piece to me that I walked away with. That was just like, even some of the biggest companies in the world are still struggling at this.
Yeah. And this is a weird callback, but how do you think your missionary background helped with that piece? Because if you think about branding, I mean, there's a lot of religious parallels. It's very, you know, it's very emotional. It's abstract. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I know that like even the restrictiveness of it, like, you know, pushed me to care about fashion. Like, it never was about like the brand of what I was wearing, but it was, you know, the African colors. And like, you know, it was like, it was a way to express myself outside of that religion. You know, we were Pentecostal. So just a strict version of Christianity, but I've never actually had someone bring that up, but it's actually like, I think it's very insightful, Dan, to bring that up, you know, just like you have this cohesiveness as a unit and that's what keeps you to stand apart. That's how you stand apart, maybe become a witness to Jesus Christ, is like people see that you look different, you dress different, you walk different, you talk different. They ask you like, what is it different about you? And then you get a chance to tell them, you know, mm-hmm. You know, I have a different affinity with brands in that, like, I'd be in Moscow and we'd travel like 20 subway trips to find this like Taco Bell stand because I love Taco Bell and I wanted these burritos that weren't even anything like that. Or like we would find this one store in Kinshasa, Congo. It's 12 million people, war zone. They had this one store called the American Store, and they would have like every once in a while they get Cooler Ranch Dorito chips. And we would buy like all 12 of them, like, you know, and just like, I have this like affinity sometimes to some of these brands that are nostalgic for me because of what they meant to me in those times where I was like trying to get a taste of America or a connection. So I think a lot of how I grew up, you know, even from band days to the religious stuff, to like the Africa stuff, all played into that. And that's also what I've tried to do as Marknology. There's only one way for me to stand out in Kansas City with a bootstrap budget, built on a family team, you know, doing what we're doing, is to put out amazing work that speaks for itself. And the brand Marknology is trusted and has an amazing reputation. You know, that's what I've been trying to do for the last 8 years, is build a company that's built on reputation.
Yeah, that's great, Drew. That makes a lot of sense. And kind of getting towards the end of our time, to ask you the question that you asked of the $500 million seller, like what are you up against now, you know, at this point?
For me, I've been like, I think coming into entrepreneurship, I was like, okay, I know nothing about business. Like, I don't have connections. I didn't have a network. I didn't have my dad introducing me to his like fraternity friend. Like, I really did start from the bottom. And I say that to just encourage anyone else that's listening that feels the same way. It's like, if you just hustle and get focused on the right things, like, you know, you can carve your own path. And for me, it was like, okay, if I'm having to do all of these things, from what I'm reading and taking in, what are like the two main areas that everyone fails? And it was cash flow and scaling. And so for me, that's been my absolute focus. Everything else can come along as it comes along, but I was going to focus on those things. So cash flow, always a problem. You get up to 30, you have more cash than you need, and then you get up to 37 employees, and now your payroll is bigger than it's ever been, and all those things. But we're bringing in partners to help us scale with SOPs and process and coaches and, you know, doing a lot, as we've even discussed. So I'm definitely working on scaling. And I will say I've been working on it for 8 years. It's just been a process when you don't have funding to get the right people and train them and build them, and then the pandemic and all kinds of things, right? And then me personally, I'm working on EQ, you know, emotional intelligence, and just trying to level up myself as kind of the leader and CEO as best I can in regards to just knowing more. You know, I go to a lot of conferences, a lot of masterminds, a lot of just different things. And I feel like what I see as not just an opportunity to win, but like something that's lacking, maybe even in the Amazon industry specific, because I think it was built by a lot of like gamer nerds in the beginning, like programmers and stuff. But I think it lacks a lot of EQ. And the best leaders, I think, are very skilled in regards to those, how to deal with employees, how to deal with clients, how to deal with growth, how to deal with partners, how to deal with, you know, your own limitations and things like that. So for me, it's been a focus on scaling as the team, as a company, obviously. And then personally, it's just been a lot of focus on EQ.
Yeah. Any books that have helped you with any of those things or anything else?
Well, this is maybe like personal, but obviously my first mentor was Gary Vee, and that, like, I know that's so common, and you're in New York and he's like a New York guy. But for me, with just didn't even know what the word entrepreneur was. And I started reading financial blogs, and I came across like Jab, Jab, Right Hook. And as a Christian, a missionary kid, I'm just like used to like giving to people, like serving people and giving to people. Like, you know, it's natural. This feels natural to me. I give as much as I have to give. And that's kind of his principles. I saw this businessman that's kind of crass and could curse, but was like a good person and preached good values and did it in business. And I was like, wow, this is cool. I could see myself like this kind of hybrid like person, you know? So it was definitely like the Gary Vee books at the beginning. He even put out a book on emotional intelligence recently that I thought was pretty good. But I've been less on business books recently, and more so on like books like The Body Keeps Score, and books like about mental health, and books about like, you know, just moving past like roadblocks that we have. Because I think like at the end of the day, once you're at a team of a certain size as a CEO, it's like, sure, I'm like the chief innovative officer, and like I'm still like that techie guy that's pioneered this path and like still doing other things and learning new things for us. But it's about how do I cultivate the team and bring out the best in everyone else? And I can't do that if I'm not doing the same thing internally. So
right.
That's how I feel. And I won't be able to read the signs. I won't be able to communicate to younger staff. I won't be able to communicate to older staff. Like, I'm going to be, you know, at a loss. And like, as someone that like needs to learn how to lead and manage as much as like be good at computer science and anything, you know, anything else, I've just been spending a ton of time there personally on their personal development.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that there is that ceiling in terms of like generalized business knowledge that you can hit pretty easily. And then it just becomes about the deeper, bigger, more timeless stuff. So definitely agree with all that. Drew, this is so much fun. How can people follow what you're up to, get in touch and all that good stuff?
Yeah. And one last book. I'll leave one book that I think is good. Extreme Ownership. Have you guys ever read Ownership by the SEAL team?
I read Dichotomy of Leadership, or the second one, but I haven't read the first.
Okay. I just Extreme Ownership. That was like a really impactful Jocko. Book that I've read recently. Jocko. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just about, you know, at the end of the day, it all falls back on the leader. And, you know, just having extreme accountability as things get hard and you feel like, that's not my fault. You know, just falling back to like, what impact did you have on it? What could you have done differently? And so that's a book I'd share. And then to get in contact with me, I'm on LinkedIn, Andrew Morgans. There's very few people with the last name Morgans with an S, so easy to find me there. Instagram is like kind of my personal, where I share like, you know, maybe behind the scenes and just thoughts of the day and things I'm thinking about. And obviously www.marknology.com for our website.
Awesome. Drew, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Again, today's episode is sponsored by our company, Sales Schema. Sales Schema helps agencies and B2B service companies build a reliable business development system through tasteful and targeted outreach. To learn more about us and check out our latest video training, again, you can go to salesschema.com/takecharge. Again, that's salesschema.com/takecharge.